I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, then checking out on the prison bus. This is it, the apocalypse. Whoa. I'm waking up, I feel it in my bones. Enough to make my system flow. Welcome to the new age, to the new age, welcome to the new age.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in once again. This is, of course, the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 19th day of January. It is Monday once again. I know, but we're all going to get through it together just like we do every week. Before you know it, it's going to be over and we'll be thinking about something else. We'll be thinking about next weekend. I hope you guys had a good weekend this last weekend. I know I certainly did. We had beautiful, beautiful weather here in Missouri, which is just so nice finally to have some nice weather. I hope you guys all had a great weekend as well. As I said, we'll get through this Monday together. Let's see here. Thank you guys who are checking out redpillreports.com. Really do appreciate all of you guys who are making that a daily stop for your daily dose of deprogramming. We do our best to keep new and pertinent information up there on the site every day so you guys can always get the latest as to what's going on. You can also go to redpillreports.com and get into the show section. In which there will be information about the guests that we always have for the day and also all of the articles that we think are important and pertinent to your lives. You can go through, kind of follow along with what I'm going to do here for the first hour, which is always the news segment of the show today. Let's see, and then the second hour today, we are going to have a doctor on the show. Dr. Dennis Harris will be joining us today. This is kind of our first big health show. I'm really excited about this because health is one of those things that a lot of people we'll take for granted and don't really talk about very much. So I'm really looking forward to having this discussion today. Unfortunately, it's not going to be a good news discussion, ladies and gentlemen. We've got some insight about some moves that the FDA is either making or is trying to make, and we need to get out in front of this thing because they're really kind of throwing the gauntlet down on the supplement industry and also on the natural medicine industry. So if you have an interest in any of those things, if you're an anti-vaccinator or if you're somebody who believes crazily that, your apple cider vinegar might actually be good for you, you might want to pay attention to this interview today because, those statements saying things like apple cider vinegar might be good for you, well, those could carry with them a pretty hefty fine going into the future. And I mean, hefty. So anyway, we're going to have a doctor on the show, Mr. Dr. Harris, and we'll be talking about natural health, the difference between natural health and the stuff that the mainstream medical establishment would like us to be part of, which most of us these days are starting to become pretty wise to. So anyway, 11 o'clock, about an hour from now, Dr. Harris will be joining us on the program, so look forward to doing that interview with him. And tomorrow, Chris Kitsey will be on the show. Chris Kitsey, obviously the founder of Scene.is. Which is essentially an encrypted Skype-type platform. And I think after this Charlie Hebdo debacle, we're seeing this, battle against encryption is going to be on the forefront here for a while, kind of tied into the whole cybersecurity response to the supposed hack of Sony by North Korea and all that kind of stuff. But you can see around the world a lot of people really clamoring to put an end to encryption, and I know that Chris Kitsey is going to want to talk about that quite a bit tomorrow. So if you're interested in that type of, the tech angle on what's going on right now and how we can protect ourselves against the onslaught that is going to be the anti-encryption onslaught coming down, going to be a good conversation. So we'll have a good week this week. I promise we'll get through Monday together. It's going to be a good week, ladies and gentlemen. I have this weird feeling about the economy this week. There are and this is just me pontificating here, but there are a lot of prime numbers showing up in the dates of this week. And if you paid attention to Christine Lagarde's goofy numerological speech that she gave at the IMF a few months ago, well, it just kind of piqued my interest a little bit. And I always try and pay attention to when these dates come up that, you know, if you were somebody that believed and all kinds of goofy things like that, well, you might want to pay attention to what these people believe. So, again, going to be, in my opinion, a very unusual week in the markets. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Obviously, it's Dr. Martin Luther King Day, so the markets are closed here in America in terms of the Dow and things like that. But the gold markets are open, seeing a little bit of volatility still from Friday's fallout. And the Forex is still open, so we're paying attention a lot to some of the moves that are going on, as you know, after this big SMB deal that they threw down on Friday. So anyway, we'll get over into some light economic news in a little bit, but I do want to get into some international news because there is a lot going on in the world. We got some pretty decent good news coming out of northern Iraq. The ISIS crew there has apparently freed 200 elderly Yazidis, which is great. You know, they released more than 200, mostly elderly Yazidis, which are members of the North Iraq Yazidi minority. And they released all these people on Saturday. These people have been being held for months, apparently, according to reports. But the Yazidis were freed on the front line southwest of the city of Kirkuk and met by Kurdish Peshmerga forces, who brought them all to a health center on the road to the Kurdish regional capital of Erbil. So mostly these are men and women, as I mentioned, elderly and disabled. Some of them are wounded, some have disabilities, and a lot of them are suffering from mental and psychological problems. A lot of them probably stemming from being transported all over the country in you know, ramshackle type conditions without food and without water, at least adequate medical care. So most likely what the report goes on to say is that it probably just became too much of a burden for the ISIS group to keep track of these people and to make sure that they were okay. Obviously, there's still about 3,000 women and children that are still being held by ISIS, and this is just specifically of the Yazidi tribe there from northern Iraq. Still about 3,000 in captivity right now by ISIS, but this move apparently took everyone quite a bit by surprise, and there hadn't really been any coordination with ISIS in terms of releasing all of these people. So again, you can pretty much just say that, you know, these people were probably too much of a burden for ISIS. When you have people in wheelchairs and things like that, it becomes really difficult to take care of those people, and so ISIS probably just cut them loose. But still good news, I guess, if you're there supporting the Yazidis. It's one of the big reasons we supposedly started this this whole air coalition with Iraq against ISIS in the northern part of the country there. So at least we're moving a little bit in the right direction on that front. There's been a big survey that came out, or a poll, I guess you could call it, of Mexican nationals, and 85% of them do not trust the Mexican president Nieto. And I think that's probably stands to reason there, because obviously, you know, this stems from this whole issue with the student teachers who were killed and burned by the drug cartels. Obviously, you know, the Mexican leaders have been kind of under the gun for quite a long time, even going back as far as Calderón's, you know, his presidency there. So what's unusual about this is that when Nieto began his administration, he really tried to ignore putting any kind of focus on the drug and gang violence that dominated the presidency of Calderón, like I was mentioning. But the violence under his rule has actually increased significantly, with the drug-related death toll reaching some 100,000 people at this point in Mexico. So Nieto probably on the out-the-door program down in Mexico, and I cannot imagine that citizen protesters haven't burnt that entire country to the ground at this point, because, again, very, very easy to trace the collusion between the government, the mayor there, and the murdered student teachers. So, I'm amazed by the restraint that the Mexican civilians are showing right now, because I don't believe that I'd be that constrained. Just saying. So anyway, hopefully Nieto will be out of office soon, and they'll replace him with somebody that actually cares about the people there, and they can start removing some of the drug cartels from business. It probably wouldn't hurt at this point to just go ahead and remove the market by legalizing all the drugs. That way we could end the whole draconian war on drugs and get back to living, you know, civilly with one another. But anyway, I digress. The Ukrainian president actually did something pretty unusual on Friday after the show, so I didn't get a chance to mention it. But Ukrainian President Poroshenko signed a decree mobilizing up to 50,000 healthy men and women between the age of 25 and 60 to the front lines in eastern Ukraine. A lot of people might call this a draft, which is probably the best word for it right now. So according to the UA today, Ukrainian President Poroshenko issued a decree mobilizing 50,000 servicemen to the front in eastern Ukraine. Okay, so these eligible people will receive notice papers calling them to service as soon as the Ukrainian parliament approves the measure. The Ministry of Defense plans to draft healthy men and women, preferably with military experience, looking specifically for tank operators, artillerymen, reconnaissance scouts, and messengers aged 25 to 60, saying again, those specific categories are in high demand. And the major general there says, we are not planning to draft untrained men for positions that require military efficiency. Military leaders are looking for those who already have been in the army or those who can serve with within civilian professions. And then combat training for these servicemen is scheduled to take between 10 and 15 days. So, wow, could you imagine? I mean, I guess if you're being drafted and you've already got a little military experience, you might be able to be brought up to speed in 10 to 15 days. But I would think if you're just being kind of picked off the front, off the, you know, out of the schools there and saying, hey, you're going to go fight a war because you're healthy between 25 and 60. I'd want more than 10 days of training. That's just me. Obviously, the situation in Kiev and Ukraine is still escalating. There was, moving on to this next report from RT, massive assault on militia-held areas Sunday morning after an order from Kiev, according to a presidential aide. So Ukrainian troops, again, launching a massive assault on the militia-held areas Sunday morning, and specifically around the area of Donetsk. So the self-proclaimed leader of the Donetsk is now accusing Kiev of trying to restart the war, which it seems to me like Kiev is obviously gearing up to continue fighting with the eastern side of Ukraine. Obviously, we're talking about drafting 50,000 more people out of the general population and giving them military training. We've obviously seen this massive assault that took place over the weekend. Let's see, reports from the ground confirmed a sharp escalation of clashes across the front line with particularly heavy artillery fired at Gorlovka. Locals in Donetsk said they have not heard such intensive shelling since the summer, according to a military official from the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic. A source also told RT that a group of OSCE monitors have demanded that the Ukrainian military stop the shelling. The source added that there is actually danger that the group itself may come under artillery fire, which is not good, obviously. And Alexander Zakharchenko, who was elected in November as the prime minister of the self-proclaimed Donetsk People's Republic, has accused Kiev of using the ceasefire to regroup troops and boost their armaments and are now trying to restart the all-out war. So again, lots and lots of pictures, lots and lots of video from around the Donetsk airport there, which was under major, major artillery fire. The Putilovsky Bridge was also destroyed in the shelling, according to RT. Two people have died, 16 other received injuries after a Ukrainian shell exploded at a bus station in the city of Gorlovka. And let's see, several buildings in the city also suffered direct hits during the bombardment, including four schools and a kindergarten. But if you go to redpillreports.com and get into the international news section there under the show section, you'll be able to see some of the pictures and some of the video from this shelling. And it is pretty significant. I mean, we're talking about, again, they've already displaced 1 million people from Ukraine, many of them women and children, a lot of them fleeing into Russia. That side of the country is an absolute military zone right now. It's and unless you really can take an opportunity to look at these pictures, it can be difficult to really see just how bad it is. And you have to remember too, these are white people with regular jobs just like ours, and they actually all have better internet than we do. So why we haven't been able to mount an international coalition calling for humanitarian aid for these eastern Ukrainians is absolutely beyond me. You know, we're sending aid to Nigeria to assist with the Boko Haram disaster. Obviously, it's a tragedy what's going on in Nigeria right now. We need to send people there. But typically, the United States would hang its hat on humanitarian crises like, I don't know, 1 million Ukrainians being displaced by a junta government. The problem is that we put that government in power. Thank you, Julian Newland. And George Soros helped quite a bit with that. So we put these people in power. And essentially right now, our tax money is being deferred to dropping bombs on the eastern side of Ukraine. So you and I sitting here right now, or those of you out there listening who pay your taxes, you guys are paying for all this. So, you know, this is insane that we haven't even really attempted to try and stop this yet. You know, it's, of course, just gives us more ammo to use against Putin. But obviously Putin now is going to step up and try and really supply some humanitarian aid to the eastern side of the country there, which of course NATO will, you know, spin to say that they are supporting the troops there, and it's just going to escalate and escalate and escalate and escalate. So anyway, we'll see what happens there, but it's not looking very good right now. More news from Russia right now. The Russian agriculture minister told a news conference in Berlin that Russia may lift its ban on food exports from Greece in the event that Greece quits the European Union. A lot of people probably are unaware that in correlation to all of the sanctions that were put on Russia, Russia followed suit, and they put sanctions on everybody else too. So a lot of these countries inside the EU are feeling the pressure from the sanctions of Russia because Russia's not importing any food from them. But now they're coming out and saying, listen, if Greece decides to leave the euro, then obviously we'll remove the sanctions that we have against importing food from them. So there's another little feather in the cap of the people in Greece who are, you know, actively trying to get away from the EU there. This is another, you know, little bit of motivation factor, I guess, for them, and would be great for the people of Greece and also for the people of Russia. Russia, obviously, last week announcing a complete ban on GMO products. So hopefully Greece, getting an opportunity to export to Russia, will take that into consideration and then follow suit. You know, obviously, we've talked a little bit about the EU allowing individual members to decide whether or not they're going to allow GM on, you know, in their sovereign nations as well. So we could see, you know, the result of this. If Greece leaves, the sanctions could be lifted, and then Greece would also have a really substantial reason not to be importing GMO seeds. So again, are all these things that Russia are doing really, really that bad? Well, it seems like if you follow them through the logical train of events, all of them end up being actually pretty good. So I don't know. We've got some more news coming out of England right now. And, this story, I'll say the headline here. The advisor to David Cameron was arrested on suspicion of raping a 13-year-old girl. So what is it about these people over there? And the pedophilia, is it just like a new thing, or is it something that's been going on for a very long time? I'm starting to really wonder. And this story doesn't really relate to the massive pedophile ring story that's coming out of the UK right now. This, you know, because all that supposedly already happened. So now we're just kind of hearing about it, and we're hearing accusations. This is a current actual arrest. The technology entrepreneur Doug Richard, who first appeared in the first two series of the BB show Dragon's Den, was actually questioned by police this month and released on bail until March. He'll be going back to court in March, and he is obviously denying the allegations. But apparently, again, the advisor to David Cameron being arrested on suspicion of raping an underage girl, and I hope that he pays heftily for that. More information coming out of Syria as well, and out of our government as well here. So Bloomberg reporting over the weekend that the first of as many of 1,000 U.S. military trainers and support personnel will be sent to the Middle East within the next week or so to lay the groundwork for more training of more moderate Syrian rebels, according to the Pentagon's top spokesman. These trainers, who are a mix of U.S. special forces and conventional forces, will deploy over the next 4 to 6 weeks to training sites outside of Syria, according to Rear Admiral John Kirby. And this is what he was saying at the Pentagon on Friday. They'll also be in Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Qatar. So all three of those locations also being identified for potential training locations. This training is the second leg of a U.S. strategy complementing American and coalition airstrikes against Islamic State and other extremist groups that started in September. The training effort was made possible after a congressional approval last year of $500 million requested by Mr. Barack Obama. The move, which is kind of a shift away from Obama's administration's Iraq First strategy for combating the Islamic State, is prompted by two developments. And the U.S. military and officials said, speaking on condition of anonymity, because they can never actually tell you what is actually going on. I really like it how they always parade these people that aren't allowed to speak. It's like, well, how do you get a job where you know all this information, but you're not allowed to actually say anything? It just seems very unusual to me. But so let's see here. First of those two reasons, officials said, mounting evidence that while coalition air power has helped stall the extremist progress in Iraq, the Islamic State has won control of almost a third of the Syrian territory, despite losing ground to Kurdish fighters around the city of Kobani. That, the official said, gives the Islamic fighters a rear area, though not an entirely safe one, in which to train, to plan, to regroup, similar to the one that the Afghanistan Taliban and their allies have had in northwestern Pakistan. The second development, which kind of burst to the surface in France, Belgium, and Germany this week, is obviously the growing fear that Europeans and North Africans who've trained in Syria are potentially a terrorist threat to Europe and North Africa. So again, the potential that these people might go to Syria, be trained, and then come back to Germany, France, Belgium, etc. ad nauseum is another apparent indicator that we need to send more people to Syria to train. I'm not really sure how that logically computes, but it is Monday and my brain's a little cloudy today, so maybe I'm just missing part of the program there. But anyway, that's what's going on there. Sleeper cells, 3,000 in Germany, apparently linked to ISIS, according to a special police report. 3,000 people have been linked to the Islamic State militants in Turkey, again, according to a police report there. And the data has prompted a red alert over possible attacks, including in NATO and the West, by the so-called sleeper cells of the jihadist group. The Turkish police intelligence report has urged surveillance of about 3,000 people to observe their connections with the jihadists, sources told the Turkish Daily News. There are around 500 to 700 Turkish citizens who have joined the ranks of the Islamic State, according to the Turkish foreign minister. But those 3,000 possible links to jihadists are an addition to the group that the Turkish foreign minister mentioned, 500 to 700, who are already currently fighting along with the Islamic State, either in Turkey or Syria. And so far, Ankara has banned entry to 7,200 people from abroad who are planning on joining the Islamic State jihadists and has deported 1,165 would-be extremists. This report contains an urgent notice saying the Islamic State extremists may stage new assaults, including bomb attacks, following the Paris shootings that killed 17 people last week. The warning also touches upon possible attacks of the consulates of Western countries by Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. NATO facilities and the citizens of Western countries may also be targeted, according to that report. And Turkish authorities have already sounded the maximum alert in the consulates and other facilities of Western countries. So, potentially way, way more ISIS-related people in Turkey than was initially anticipated. So we're keeping an eye on that as well. Again, this whole ISIS thing, man, it's just blowing up across the globe right now. And it's really interesting to see some of the reaction to the Charlie Hebdo stuff in terms of, you know, some countries like the UK not wanting to show the new cover that Charlie Hebdo did the week following after the shootings. There's a lot of people that are really up in arms about this whole First Amendment right. And, you know, I got to say, I'm kind of on the fence about the whole thing. I think if you're potentially targeting a group of people with something that you know is going to potentially incite a riot, I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily a great deal. Anyway, I'll digress away from that for just a second. Anybody in the chat room that wants to comment on all these things, I love that you guys are in there. I really appreciate you guys being in there, because this whole concept of this show is to create a forum so we can all communicate and trying to bring you guys the best information from around the world and the best guests that we can find to keep you guys informed about what's going on. And so anybody who wants to be in the chat room, love you guys being in there, and I'll do my best to be bouncing back and forth. So if you have any comments, because ISIS, exactly, Abe, because ISIS. And again, this whole ISIS thing, I got to go back to the fact that back in the 1980s, there was another organization called ISIS known as the Islamic, the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. That moniker has been in play for quite a long time. And also interesting about that connection with ISIS and Israel was that back in 1982, Israel was pretty vocal about their desire to see Iraq fractured into two states, or three states, excuse me, a Kurdish state, the Iraqi state, and then basically separating the Shias and the Sunnis. And so isn't that interesting that we see now ISIS exploding onto the scene? They seem to be very wealthy, seem to be very powerful and scary, and they have, you know, somebody's making really pretty black flags for them, and they all have Toyota Tundras, a nicer truck than I've got. Awesome, right? But you got to kind of wonder if since that moniker came out of Israel and that's not a, that's not conjecture. The Israeli Secret Intelligence Service is a real thing. You can look it up. And that one of their main motifs or one of their main objectives was to fracture Iraq. And that's kind of what we see, at least initially, we thought was going to be the result of ISIS. Iraq has really done a great job reorganizing and fighting to keep their sovereignty. And I know that their budget right now has got a lot of money allocated towards defense because of ISIS. But you kind of have to wonder if that was part of the motivation of ISIS. At least I'm certainly wondering that. I don't know about you guys out there. But I certainly wonder that. Okay, we're about a minute away from going to the breaks right now. And we come back, we've got a lot more national news. We've got a little bit of economic news. Obviously, the market is closed right now, but I'm going to try and help people get their heads around what happened as a result of the Swiss National Bank move the other day. I think, honestly, it being Monday right now, and even though it's a holiday and a lot of things are still closed, people are really licking their wounds right now. And the totality of the event, I don't even think is known yet, but I think that there are a lot of people who have really gotten hurt by that surprise move from the Swiss bank. Also, if you're a ufologist, there's a new website you got to go check out and a new release of information by the United States Air Force. And this is absolutely cool. I think you guys are going to love this. And there's another story that I find to be really interesting. Seems like every few years we get this whole indication from NASA. There may, in fact, be some extra planets out there. We're going to talk about that when we come back to you. Anyway, 3-minute break, guys. This is the Red Door Report radio broadcast. My name's Jim. We'll be right back.
Welcome, my dear friends. Welcome to the Agent for Truth radio show. I am the Agent for Truth, Joe Bannister, your host. Happy Saturday to you all. Given the many blessings God has bestowed on our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in heaven. So we start the show by praying that Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will
like
be done.
Like a cancer that silently spreads.
Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
We must take America back.
Well, today we have a guest that I hope is going to share some thoughts on the Constitution and maybe some focus here and there on the Second Amendment. The guest has appeared on my show in the past. He's really an excellent and experienced litigator. He has litigated various Second Amendment cases. He's argued Second Amendment cases in California and also federally. And he teaches constitutional law. So I think you'll also be interested because, you know, our President Obama claims to be a constitutional scholar, and yet he seems to violate the Constitution daily. So we might get some comments on another, or from another constitutional law professor as well. His name is Donald Kilmer, and he's an attorney in San Jose, California. But maybe I'll just let Don tell the listeners a little bit about himself rather than me doing it for him. Don, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, John.
So what, maybe just get listeners, tell listeners about your, where you're teaching and just briefly about your background as an attorney.
Oh, I teach at Lincoln University Law School in San Jose. It's a, you might call it a non-traditional, but it is a state bar approved school that, is basically a kind of a, it is a night school. But it's a school that's primarily taught by working judges and working lawyers. I'm proud to have actually graduated from the school and, to teach there. It's got a long reputation of providing alternative means for becoming a lawyer. The libertarian in me has always sort of objected to this idea of a bar card being a barrier to admission. If we the people make the law, then we the people should be able to litigate our rights in court without necessarily having to hire a gun. Now, that being said, I do not counsel anybody to go into court without the advice of a lawyer because
backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called MicroPlant Powder Gold. MicroPlant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make MicroPlant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
Degrees of Insanity with Donnie Gilson.
Sunday, Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the radio show, ladies and gentlemen. That's a sound I like to hear, bumper music that I recognize. Sorry about that little break there, guys. I'm not exactly sure what happened. I know that Chris has been working like a crazy person on the vault, which is the kind of the behind the scenes stuff that goes on here at Truth Frequency, and just kind of working our way through a little technical stuff. But we are back. We are live right now, so we're only behind by about 10 minutes. And shouldn't really cut into our time today. So I apologize for that. Thank you guys for sticking with us through all the craziness. And anyway, we are back right now. So let's move back into some national news here, because I'm going to take you guys around the country here real quick. There was a shooting that took place in Delaware on Saturday evening at about 8:30. A vehicle drove near Vice President Joe Biden's residence in Delaware and fired multiple gunshots. But according to reports, the president and his wife were not home at the time. They have done thorough searches and are continuing to do thorough searches on the property there at Biden's residence, and to see if there were any rounds or anything that hit the structure. That was according to Secret Service telling CNN that separately. But the vice president's residence is several hundred yards away from the main road where the shots were fired, and no damage was apparently found at any of the local residences. So now they're working with the FBI and the Secret Service to see if they can figure out exactly what happened. But there was a gentleman driving by Joe Biden's house and shooting rounds out of the window, and then apparently drove off at high speed. So that happened over the weekend. No real indication as to what is the result of that investigation so far, but we'll keep you up to date in case anything changes going into the future. There was a pretty big announcement from the Justice Department over the weekend. I think a lot of people might be pretty confused about it, because on the surface, it sounds like really, really good news. It sounds like something where you would say, okay, this is great. And the article is talking about the Justice Department ending its unconstitutional property seizure programs. A lot of people have been talking about civil asset forfeiture and the way the state and local governments will essentially steal cash from you, or if they suspect that there's some crime going on in your property, they can seize your house and they can sell it. But a lot of people don't understand that one of the ways that the state and local governments were able to do that was that they were able to then gift all of that property or the money or whatever it was that they had taken. They were able to then gift that to the federal government, and then the federal government would go on and either sell it or redistribute the assets. And it actually allowed local police departments and drug task force to keep about 80% of the profits from these adopted seizures. So the change that has taken place is that the federal government says they will no longer participate in adopting anything that state and local government seizes. So yes, it's kind of good news in the fact that the civil asset forfeiture laws are changing at a national level, but they do go on to say that they are still going to leave it up to the individual states and municipalities to whether or not they want to continue with their own civil asset forfeiture program. So, you know, I don't really necessarily see the Justice Department or Eric Holder as a beacon of light, as a shining example of how things should be done. And I would be very surprised if other local and, you know, state municipalities, felt about him that way as well. So I would imagine that although, they are trying to kind of change direction at a national level, whether or not that will, you know, bleed down into, state, county, and local, you know, governments or the state, county, and local law enforcement agencies kind of remains to be seen. We also know that the civil asset forfeiture laws for states and counties are a huge, huge boon economically for the police departments here. And they like to buy things like margarita makers and things like that, you know, stuff that they really couldn't justify in their regular budget. One of the police officers, that is active in the civil asset forfeiture program in Washington state actually had to go in front of a congressional, hearing, to talk about how exactly they were distributing those assets after the fact. And he essentially really didn't know because there really are no hard and fast rules about how those assets are distributed. And he mostly said, that it's for stuff that we want, that we would like to own. That's pretty much it. So all the stuff that they can't really fit into the budget because people would be in an uproar about things like margarita mixers and stuff like that. That's what they're buying with these things. So hopefully, although I don't believe it will happen, hopefully that this, new indication from the Justice Department will kind of, you know, at least provide, a shadow of an indication of which way we would like these organizations to go. It remains to be seen whether or not they'll follow suit on that. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. One person is dead, two injured after a shooting early Saturday at a mall in Melbourne, Florida. Police did not immediately say whether or not the shooter was dead. Earlier, they had said that the shooter was contained after gunfire erupted at the Melbourne Square Mall on Florida's East Coast. So a mall shooting did take place in Florida over the weekend. Not a lot of information forthcoming about that. Another kind of unusual story. These two kids, Dalton Hayes and Cheyenne Phillips, they've kind of been likened to Bonnie and Clyde. And they recently left Kentucky and they've been carrying out a multi-state crime spree, apparently over the last couple of weeks, running away from home. They were captured in Florida on Sunday, according to Kentucky officials. Dalton Hayes, Cheyenne Phillips, they were found by U.S. Marshal Service and local law enforcement early Sunday in Panama City, Florida, sleeping in a stolen pickup truck. They were taken into custody without incident, according to the Grayson County Sheriff's Office there. And Hayes and Phillips are suspected of stealing three different vehicles, two with firearms inside, using phony checks and destroying property since they disappeared around January 3rd from Grayson County in western Kentucky. They are not suspected of any violent crimes and no one was injured during their two-week hunt for the pair, but they have now been arrested. So that crime spree apparently coming to an end. Just crazy to think that an 18-year-old and his 13-year-old girlfriend out there causing so much trouble this day and age. Just hard to believe. Oh, I got to give kudos to Arizona right now. Arizona has become the very first state in the union which will require high school students pass a civics citizenship test. I'll tell you what, you get some free time on your hands, go try and take this civics citizenship test, the one that you would have to take if you were going to become a citizen of the United States. It is really, really hard, ladies and gentlemen. I have tried it, and I'll tell you what, I could pass it, but it definitely showcased to me a lot of areas that I needed to brush up on. So I think this is very cool. NBC News reported that this law is going to require high school students correctly answer 60 of 100 questions, which is obviously a pretty low bar, ladies and gentlemen, but 60 of 100 questions on the civics portion of the United States citizenship test. This whole thing is a trend that's being pushed nationally by the Joe Foss Institute, which has set a goal of having all 50 states adopted by 2017, which would be the 230th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution. And I totally agree with lawmakers in this respect. He says, some of them say, you know, I think we need to encourage the people of America to become more aware of the values of America. How can we expect them to protect the principles on which this country was founded if we're not preparing them for that task right now? I think this is a fantastic idea. I think it should be absolutely, and I think, you know, 80 out of 100 should be the lowest bar that we allow people to pass with. But I really think that's a fantastic idea. So I'm glad to see that. And then some other great news coming out of a different state, Connecticut has now become the first state to require that every single time a police officer uses a taser, they will have to file a use of force report. So this is the first of its kind in the nation, this reform, and it works like this. Every single time a police officer fires a taser, they will have to file a use of force report. And this report is very thorough, according to the ACLU. It goes through the person's race, their age, their height, their weight, how the taser was used, what mode it was in, how many times it was fired, whether the person had an injury, and whether or not medical assistance was provided. And it will also seek to attach electronic data that's uploaded directly from the taser. So that will eliminate the ability for law enforcement officers to lie about how they were using these tasers. So again, more fantastic accountability coming to law enforcement around the country. I totally support making mandatory reporting happen for use of tasers. Thinking about that poor 76-year-old man that was pulled over in Florida. That police officer got fired, by the way. Not a paid vacation for a month like we see so often. But that guy that got pulled over in Florida with dealer plates, and then the guy tased him twice on the ground, 76-year-old. The problem is that police officer, if he had tased that old guy and killed him, he would have gotten away with it. Would have been totally fine. The guy was resisting, even though the police officer had no bearing to pull him over, had no reason to even be, approaching him in a conversational manner. Anyway, would have been totally fine. So again, Connecticut trying to start, to inject some accountability into the law enforcement agencies around the world. That's a great first step, and I love it. So I just wanted to say that too. There's also a new bill that's going to be working its way through Congress. Will remain to be seen about how successful it is. But obviously, Congress right now is set to rewrite the laws governing the nation's schools this year, and the Common Core might, hopefully, fingers crossed, turn into a history lesson. So the Obama administration has been quietly supporting the national standards for students in kindergarten through high school, developed with the support of the Gates Foundation by a group of state election education officials. Only a handful of states have refused to adopt the core or have abandoned it, despite widespread frustration with the standards among conservatives and educators. This all could change with new legislation released just last Tuesday by Senator Lamar Alexander, who is a Republican from Tennessee. The new chairman, he's also the new chairman of the Senate's Education Committee. In a rebuke to the administration, Alexander's bill implies that Obama's Education Department has overstepped its authority and gives states more freedom to choose their own educational and academic standards, amongst other things. Alexander right now still has to win enough votes from the Democrats to break a filibuster, and he still has to persuade Obama to sign the bill, which is kind of a tall order. But the business lobby supports the Common Core, along with many of the other policies that impose sanctions on schools where students fall short that are weakened in Alexander's bill. So many moderate Republicans also may be reluctant to support this. But hopefully they will get in front of this Common Core thing and root it out, because I cannot tell you. I'm not great at math. I used to be really good at math, but looking at some of this Common Core stuff has definitely made me think I'm an idiot at this point. And that's part of the issue with Common Core, is that it continues to divide. It really strengthens that divide between parents and teachers and students, because right now kids are coming home with homework that their parents cannot help them with. And it also seeks to undermine the authority of the parents, because if you're not smart enough to help me with my math homework, why would I listen to you in matters of the heart or matters of anything else? So again, these educational standards still kind of falling under that divide and conquer motif, if you ask me. So anyway, hopefully Common Core will be a thing of the past very, very soon. I want to jump over to Florida really quick. A Florida police chief has suspended a sniper training program, which has been widely criticized over the weekend for using mugshots of African-American men for target practice. This North Miami police chief, J. Scott Dennis, said the department is now investigating the program after a National Guard soldier discovered her brother's bullet-riddled mugshot at a gun range last month. All right, so the North Miami Police Department recognizes how, taken out of context, this may appear offensive, right? So the sniper program from this North Miami Police Department was using mugshots of African-American perpetrators, if you want to call them that, for sniper training practice, right? And so they discarded all of these mugshot targets at a firing range, and somebody who was a National Guard soldier, saw a picture of her brother with bullet holes in his face, in the pile of trash, and obviously got a little bit upset about it. And so kind of interesting that the police chief now saying, well, taken out of context, I could see how that might be offensive. What context could you put that in that wouldn't be offensive would be my question that I would ask. But he also says that no disciplinary action will be taken because no policies were violated. Unbelievable. It seems like another police department that just needs to be completely disbanded at this point. But that's what's going on in Florida. Absolutely crazy. I'm going to talk a little bit about the economy right now. Looking at the futures for tomorrow's market in the Dow, looks like it is up a little bit, about 50 points right now. Let's see what is going on with oil. Oil really staying pretty steady around that 47.5 mark. It's down a little bit today, 47.63, after a little bit of a rise over the weekend, after, again, of course, this Swiss National Bank debacle that went down. And gold, 1273 right now. It was at a high Friday of about 1280, so I think we saw a little bit of profit taking over the weekend. But again, the fact that it hasn't fallen dramatically is a pretty good indicator that the volatility, I think, is going to stay in the market for a little bit of time here. Also, silver falling just a touch, 17 and 70 big pennies will buy you an ounce of silver right now. Probably a great thing to have. I want to just talk some about this Swiss National Bank move that went on, because obviously over the weekend, there's been a lot of discussion about it, and a lot of the other shoes are kind of starting to drop. But there are a lot of just very key little points that people are making, and I'm not going to go too in depth on what might happen for the rest of the week in relation to this. But I do want to kind of put it into some perspective here for people. There was a new opinion piece from PIMCO that just came out over the weekend. Now, PIMCO is the world's largest investment firm. They have an eye-watering $1.87 trillion of assets under management, okay? And the authors of this opinion piece from PIMCO pointed out that the size of the franc's intraday move on Friday, this is a quote, may likely dwarf any previous one-day move in a developing market currency, going back to and including the break of currency pegs against gold under Bretton Woods systems in the 1970s. So you're talking about representatives from PIMCO, again, the world's largest investment firm, saying that this move from the Swiss National Bank and its subsequent boost, you know, crazy boost, it was up by almost 30%, the Swiss franc against the euro. Initially, it settled down to being up about 17%. But they're saying that move was a bigger move than removing the gold peg from currency back in the 1970s. That is a pretty significant statement. We're talking about the most significant economic activity that has happened in 45 years, ladies and gentlemen. That is what people are saying around the world right now. So let's talk a little bit more about some of the fallout. Probably the biggest one would be Everest Capital Global. They are a macro fund, and they just went from just shy of $1 billion to zero in milliseconds as a result of this near wipeout due to the massive CHF short position. A lot of people probably don't understand that places like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan and all these hedge fund managers, they were substantially short against the franc. They anticipated, because of the potential for the ECB to unleash quantitative easing like they have been threatening to do, and also because of the Greek exit, which could be happening in 6 days or so, a lot of those people anticipated that once that happened, that the value of the franc would go down. And they did something called a put option, where you anticipate that the value of something is going to go down. So all of these major financial institutions were betting hard against the Swiss franc. Major, major hard. So one of those investment groups, again, Everest Capital Global Management, Marco Dmitry Vejic, who is the hedge fund manager, he has survived at least five emerging market crises, okay? He's closing his largest hedge fund after losing virtually all its money last week when the Swiss National Bank unexpectedly let the franc trade freely against the euro, according to one person familiar with the firm. Everest Capital Global Fund had about $830 million in assets at the end of December, The Miami-based firm, which specializes in emerging markets, still manages seven funds with about $2.2 billion in assets, but the global fund, the firm's oldest, was betting the Swiss franc would decline, according to this person who, again, won't be named because he would like the information to stay private. Everest had grown to about $2.7 billion by the start of 1998 after navigating crises in Mexico and Southeast Asia. They also navigated Russia's default and currency devaluation. But they made it through that. Okay. So he, the owner of the key, the firm here, Marco, again, revived the firm a decade later, and managed $3 billion. Okay. Then the global finance crisis hit and their assets shrunk by $1 billion. Last year, the main fund rose again 14.1%, driven by Chinese equities and bets against currencies, including a wager that the Swiss franc would fall after its citizens rejected a referendum that would have required the central bank to hold at least 20% of its assets in gold, right? Remember that referendum? We remember the value of the franc going down. And, of course, if you're a global currency speculator, you're paying attention to stuff like that. But in other words, to really put this into perspective, Marco survived the vagaries of extremely volatile markets for more than 15 years and actually was successful. He even flourished. But all it took to destroy him was one decision by a conference room of central planners who were confident that they knew better than the market for the second time in the last 3.5 years. Is it ironic? Yes, it is exceptionally ironic. So again, hedge funds going way down, a lot of people having major, major bets against the franc being really affected by this. Central banks across the world right now, upside down. Again, this is another article from Zero Hedge. I won't get into the whole thing, but they're basically speculating that banks like Goldman, Deutsche Bank, Barclays were heavily, heavily short the franc, and therefore, of course, were their clients. So many private investors have lost everything and then some, as if the losses from the oil slump off the cliff weren't damaging enough. Yet to the realm of finance, but the CHF franc was pegged to the slumping euro. So what did we really expect was going to happen? The timing of this may have been a surprise, but really fundamentally, was it a surprise? There's a lot of economic analysts that have been all over the radio and TV for the last 3 years saying that this peg would not last and that absolutely was going to falter. The ECB, European Central Bank, has now switched into red alert mode. It's becoming increasingly obvious that the European economy is stuck in an extremely dangerous deflationary spiral. The ECB president, Mario Draghi, is now starting to get, you can tell his hands are starting to get a little sweaty. Okay, so it's now been about 4 months since he unveiled his new bazooka plan of 1,000 billion euros, of which approximately a quarter have already been deployed. Despite pumping several hundred billions into the financial system, the inflation rate keeps going down and has now reached negative territory in the eurozone as of December. This is a pretty alarming fact, and while the situation could be resolved, if there's absolutely no time to waste, as only a short period of deflation could actually be corrected, but if the deflation persists for a longer period of time, consumers will definitely get aware that the consumer prices are becoming cheaper and cheaper and probably end up refraining from buying anything more than they would absolutely need as they wait for prices to continue to fall. This is going to obviously decrease the amount of consumer spending, causing the economy to contract even further, leading to stronger deflation. You can see how this is going to be a vicious, vicious cycle. Again, following suit, following this is going to be an announcement from the ECB about quantitative easing. You can just almost guarantee it. If you don't believe me, just go ask Japan. That's essentially what I would recommend doing at this point. Also, a lot of speculators estimating that gold will remain volatile, but they anticipate that it will probably continue to rise. So right now, probably still a great time to be in the gold, ladies and gentlemen. Let's talk about this. Air Force Times has got a new article out right now about the fabled Project Blue Book, which is the Air Force's files on UFO sightings and investigations. These have tantalized and frustrated extraterrestrial enthusiasts for decades. But this week, right now, nearly 130,000 pages of declassified UFO records, a trove that would make Agent Fox Mulder's mouth water, hit the web. UFO enthusiast John Greenwald has spent nearly two decades filing Freedom of Information Acts for the government files on UFOs and other phenomena. On the 12th of January, Greenwald posted the Blue Book files, as well as files on the Blue Book's 1940s era predecessors, Project Sign and Project Grudge on his online database, The Black Vault. So if you just go to a start page search and look for The Black Vault, you will be able to find all this. This is the first time that all this information has been available on the internet in PDF form in a searchable format. So there you go. If you're a ufologist, you've pretty much just hit the mother load. And again, just so many stories of ufology coming out of the woodwork these days. Very interesting stuff going on. Also, Beagle 2, which was the UK spacecraft thought lost on the surface of Mars back in 2003, has now been found. It seems like the probe successfully landed but was not able to deploy its solar panels, which meant it was not able to communicate with Earth, but it still could have some scientific data stored in its memory that human astronauts could one day receive. This is kind of a big deal because up until now, it was widely thought that this little probe had crashed, which would obviously mean that the UK would not be among the short list of people who are able to successfully land a probe on Mars. But apparently they did do it. They were able to do it. Does not look like the probe crashed or has any damage. So now you can include the UK on that short list of people who are capable of putting a rover on Mars. Very cool. So I wonder if they're going to be able to find that and then download some information from it. Got to recommend you guys go and check out some health news. I wasn't able to get to it today, but we're just about out of time and moving on towards our guest. I do have to say one other cool science article that came out this week. Remember, I think it was early last week. No, it was last Tuesday. It was last Saturday, a week ago Saturday, that Elon Musk SpaceX was trying to deliver a payload to the International Space Station, but then they were also going to come back and try and land their rocket on that floating platform. Well, initially it was thought that there was not any film from that floating platform. We'll call it a crash landing, I guess would be a good way to put it. But apparently Elon Musk, I mean, I got to tell you, Elon Musk has got one of the greatest senses of humor I've ever read about in my life, but he was able now, they have released, this is what he said. So Elon Musk came out this weekend and he said, turns out we did recover some of the impact video frames from the drone ship and it's kind of begging to be released. So there's four still frames from the video. You can also see the video, but he goes on to say, he says, before the impact, the fins lose power and go hard over, engine fights to restore, but the rocket hits hard at a 45-degree angle, smashing the legs and the engine section. Residual oil, fuel, and oxygen combine. And then he says, we have what we would classify as a full RUD, which is a rapid, unscheduled disassembly event. I think that is absolutely fantastic that you can have a sense of humor about something that cost you, $200 billion. And a rapid, unscheduled disassembly, apparently, is what took place there. And it's worth going to check them out in the science section today in that video. We're going to come back in just 3 minutes with Dr. Dennis Harris. We're talking about the FDA, natural supplements, things like that. So do stay right here. Right back.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why, with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for joining us on this very special day. We are going to have the very first health-oriented show today. I'm really excited about this. This is one of those arenas that we haven't really gotten to broach too much on the air, and kind of a whole genre of guests that we want to start bringing onto the program, because natural health, you know, people really don't understand, I don't think, how important all of the decisions that you make every day can affect, how those things can affect your health. You know, things from lack of sleep to the crap that we put into our bodies to the Wi-Fi signals, all this stuff is surrounding us all the time. And unless you're actually aware of it and able to make some adjustments to your life, your health can really be compromised. So I want to start talking more about health in general. And so today we are bringing on Mr. Dr. Dennis Harris, who's got an amazing background in terms of regular medicine as well as natural medicine. So we're going to let him kind of talk a little bit about his background and how that transition happened in his life. And we're also going to be talking about the FDA today. And I have been really struggling lately to come up with anything positive at all that I could say about the FDA. And I have to tell you, I have failed miserably. I can't come up with anything. And again, the things that they're trying to do right now that we're going to be discussing in the realm of supplements and natural health are absolutely draconian. And some of the changes that might be coming down the pike are just, we got to get in front of this thing right now. So I wanted to have Dr. Harris come on so he could talk about some of the changes that might be taking place in the FDA and how it might affect all of us and our health going forward. So first and foremost, Dr. Harris, thank you very much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. It's very nice to have you here. If you would mind, before we get into this whole FDA debacle and talking about how just absolutely evil this organization is, would you do the listeners and myself a favor and kind of just give us some of the highlights of your background in the medical industry? Because I think people are going to be really interested to find out some of the various accomplishments that you have that you've been undergoing throughout your whole career, Dr. Harris.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks. You know, I graduated medical school from the Ohio State University. Go Bucks! As you know, as an aside, you know, we just won the national championship. So
I know, and I won't mention the fact that I'm from Nebraska, and we'll just move completely away from that whole conversation.
That's okay. You guys are in the same conference now.
That's right.
So
that's right.
We get to play each other.
That's right.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, I graduated from the medical school at Ohio State University. I took a rotating internship for a year at Grant Hospital in Columbus, Ohio. And then I went back to Ohio State to become a resident in physical medicine and rehabilitation.
Okay.
And After 2 years of that residency, I went down to Dallas, Texas, to become chief resident at Medicine and Rehabilitation, which basically means that you're responsible for all the other residents that are going through the training.
Okay.
And you are doing a substantial part of those particular residents. So I did that for 2 years. Then I moved to Phoenix, Arizona in 1967, and I've been here ever since. Interestingly enough, I was kind of a pioneer because physical medicine rehabilitation is not a major specialty in medicine. And at the time that I went through the program and came out west, nobody even knew what it was. They looked at me like I was kind of a diamond head rattler or something.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it was really strange. So I went around to everybody, and I was the first physician in physical medicine rehabilitation to have a private practice in Arizona. There were only three others, and they were all based in hospitals around the state. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got the chance to spread the word about what physical medicine rehabilitation really was and build a practice up that way. And I started the Department of Physical Medicine Rehabilitation at several hospitals in the Valley. Mm-hmm. I also started the first treatment program for chronic pain in the Southwest. There were only seven programs other than that at the time throughout the country. And we really had some incredible success. I was the first one to set up the program as an outpatient program and prove that you could treat chronic pain as an outpatient. So all the chronic pain programs that you now see are kind of an offshoot of that.
Would you add that to like sports rehabilitation and stuff like that? I mean, you basically created that entire niche then, huh?
Yes, no question about it. And yeah, I worked with all the trainers out here. I worked with all the, you know, the college kids, the pros, some of the pros, things of that nature. So it's been fun through the years. What I really ended up specializing in primarily was the diagnosis and non-surgical treatment of pain, both acute pain and mostly chronic pain. So I really was able to go ahead and get a lot of value and a lot of benefit from a personal standpoint on changing people's lives. Because when you have, I don't know if you've ever been involved with anybody who's had chronic pain, but it is one of the most destructive things that ever happens in someone's life.
Yes. I have to tell a story. I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you, but I recently just learned how to spell sciatic, if that is any kind of indication.
Oh,
of
yes.
I'll tell you what. You've never experienced pain. You know how you're not supposed to do that whole lift and twist thing? They tell you don't lift. Okay. Well, I did that, and that was the worst move of my life. And I swear for like 6 weeks, I could not even roll over in bed under my own power. That's how bad my sciatic was, and still isn't great. I do a lot of yoga and things like that to try and keep it stretched. But I'll tell you what. You are not blowing smoke when you talk about sometimes the pain can be a destructive life force, because it will change the scope of every single thing and every decision that you make, you know, sciatic pain in general.
Oh, yeah, and the longer it goes on, the more prominent that is. I mean, it really gets to the point where it takes over people's lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Along with that, I want to tell a story about, you know, you have me on now as a proponent of natural health products and natural health, natural medicine.
Right.
So, but when I came out to Phoenix, Arizona, I really had no idea what any of that meant. I mean, I was trained routinely, and Ohio State is a very mainstream program. I was trained with all the medications, the things, all of the other magic that we do, or that we were doing at that time and were so proud of. And that's the way I started my practice, and I built it up. And that's the way it was until somewhere in the 70s, in the mid-70s, I started to see more and more side effects from the medications that we were using.
Right.
And more people reacting to them. And, you know, I kind of expected that because we got briefed on all of those by the drug reps and things like that. But it really never kind of became serious because nobody was in the hospital. Nobody got killed. Nobody did any, there was nothing dramatic about it.
Okay.
People were just complaining, and I'd say, "It's a side effect of the medicine. Let's stop that. We'll put you on a different one." And we'd go on our merry way. And that's what your typical doctor does. Well, I had one guy that who was his name was Jack. He was on. He was the main guy. There, I guess you'd say he was the star of the tennis program at Scottsdale Community Hospital. And he was 18 years old.
Okay.
Desperate to become a pro tennis player, just played all the time, practiced all the time, loved the sport. And as you know, it's a very active sport. And you talk about getting in weird positions and everything, that happens in tennis.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he blew out a disc. And talk about sciatica, he was classic, just like you. Mm-hmm. Couldn't move, couldn't bend over, couldn't turn, couldn't do anything without incredible pain.
And boy, at 18, I couldn't even imagine going through something like that at 18.
Right.
Boy.
Whew. Yeah, this is a real athletic kid. You
right,
know?
Right.
So, anyway, his family doctor referred him to me, and, pardon me, I checked him over and did the testing, and sure enough, proved that he did have a ruptured disc with a lot of nerve damage going on. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, fine. I had him and his parents there. I said, here's the story, and I gave them the whole thing, the diagnosis and what the proposed treatment was, physical therapy and a home treatment program where he was doing exercise and ice and other things at home.
Right.
And of course, in those days, we didn't have the variety of medicines that we have now. And there were not that many different anti-inflammatory medications, but sure enough, boy, I put him on the newest and best, you know?
Right.
And I sat them down and said, now listen, we're getting a lot of reports about side effects from these anti-inflammatories, and I want to go over those with you. And I did. And I said, the worst one is belly problems. I mean, that if you get any nausea, any pain, any discomfort in the stomach, if you get any change in your bowel habits, any black stools, anything like that, immediately stop taking the medicine, call me.
Mm-hmm.
I made sure everybody understood that and everybody agreed. So we went along and Jack was improving. And then about a month and a half into his therapy, one Saturday night at 3:30 in the morning, I get a call from a buddy of mine who was a surgeon at the hospital that I mainly practiced at.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, how would you like to come into the hospital right now? And I said, good morning, what are you talking about? He said, I've got your patient Jack here, and he is absolutely bleeding out, and we've got to get him into surgery right away. I thought you'd like to swab in.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, I'll be right over there.
Right.
When I got there, he had lost so much blood that he had blood running into all four extremities and four nurses pumping the blood in. Otherwise, he would have died.
Wow.
So we opened him up, and sure enough, his entire belly was completely filled with blood.
Right.
These wonderful medications had eaten a hole right into the stomach and hit an artery and eaten their way into the artery, and he was literally bleeding to death almost as fast as we could pump it in.
Right.
So the end of the story is we got him in the surgery and saved his life, but that was so scary and it was so profound that I said, you know what, there's got to be a better way to do this.
Right.
I'm afraid I'm going to kill somebody using the very medications that we want to do to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So I really began to look around, started to find out, and really engulfed myself with natural ingredients and what they do.
Right.
And I was amazed because nobody had ever told me anything about that. We never learned. You know, through all of medical school, we probably had less than a week where we talked about nutrition, vitamins, minerals, natural types of ingredients. That was it.
That's insane. I mean, think about that,
yeah.
Especially going forward now. Do you think that that ratio is the same in medical school now? Do they get about a week's worth of nutritional, you know?
Unfortunately, it's probably not that much different in most of them, but they are.
Wow.
There's a little bit of hope. There are some schools that are starting to practice integrative medicine
mm-hmm.
and teach integrative medicine. our University of Arizona Medical School down in Tucson, Arizona, and now up here, and they have branches up here now in Phoenix. They're teaching integrative medicine. They have a whole department based on it. There's a couple of others around the country that are doing the same thing. Do I think it'll eventually become more prevalent? Yeah, but it's a very, very slow change. I mean, medicine is like this huge that you could put atomic bombs against, and it would hardly make a dent. So yes, changing things in medicine really takes a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, the pharmaceutical lobby in Washington is the largest lobby group there is. And I think for every dollar that they spend, they get $200 back. And I'll tell you what, that's a pretty good job if you can get it. You know what I mean?
Darn right. No question about it. And, you know, there have been, at this particular point, I'm mostly retired now. But my practice during the last 25 years was virtually all using natural products and using acupuncture instead of injections and doing a whole lot of different things that were more constructive and more beneficial for the patient. But I eventually became knowledgeable enough that I could start formulating products. I formulated a couple of hundred different products that designed for different purposes, anywhere from how to prevent a hangover to how to grow hair.
Oh, right.
But really. But anyway, you know, some of the things that, from a governmental standpoint, some of the things that we've noticed here that are starting to go on here were really reflected earlier in Europe. And Germany was a great example. You know, if you talk about a catch-22, here's the deal. We wanted to, I have a non-medical partner, and he and I have been partners for 35 years. And we have a company that markets pharmaceutical nutraceutical agents, and we also have a factory that produces them. But in the beginning, one of the things we wanted to do was to try and get into Germany, because Germany really has high standards, and we thought, gee, get in there and we can move from there to any of the other European countries. Mm-hmm. Well, Germany is really interesting. If you want to make application to register a product there, they come back and they say, well, wait a minute, what studies have you done? Well, we haven't done any studies. Well, you got to do studies because you got to prove that the product is safe and effective.
Okay.
So if you do those studies, then you prove that the product's safe and effective, and they say, and you want to register it, and they say, well, you can't register it as a dietary supplement. Why not? Well, because it's so effective that it's now considered to be a drug.
Ah, there's the catch-22. Okay.
Is that a catch-22? Well, that's exactly what this FDA proposal will end up doing.
So,
except it's even worse.
Just to clarify, so this is a proposal by the FDA. This is not something that is actually in effect right now.
It's not in effect, but people are so scared of it that they're treating it like it is in effect.
Okay.
So the FDA, without actually making something a formal rule and without going through the rulemaking process administratively, have already gotten the same benefit from it as if it were a law.
Right.
I mean, it's absolutely incredible. You know, one of the things that, pardon me, I get so teed off about the FDA because, they are so hypocritical, it's just unbelievable. It's obvious to anybody that reads or anybody that's in the industry, particularly in any possible way, that the FDA is in the pocket of the pharmaceutical companies.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's where they get most of their money. That's where they get all their fees. and they're huge. I mean, you know, to get a drug approved now, go through all the testing, go through all the other rigmarole that the FDA demands, it costs anywhere between $100 million and $500 million.
Wow.
It's just unbelievable. And that's one of the reasons that the drug companies justify making profits of over 1,000% on a lot of the medications that come out, because they've spent a lot of money to get them there.
Right.
And, you know, from an economic standpoint, I can kind of understand that. That doesn't change anything, though. I mean, you look at the FDA, and they say, we're here to protect your safety, and we're here to make sure that whatever you take in your mouth is not only safe, but is going to be effective.
Right.
Well, that is, when I say hypocritical, that's absolutely a minimum statement, because every single year in this country, over 144,000 people die from the side effects of medications just being taken the way they are supposed to be taken.
Wow.
And an additional 2.2 million people, 2,200,000 people every year are hospitalized because of those same side effects. Do we ever hear anything about that?
No.
Absolutely not.
No, no. And they're protected in the courts, too. I mean, if, God forbid, you have some sort of vaccine injury or some sort of side effect from a drug, because you might as well be living in Abu Dhabi at this point, because you're not going to get any kind of accountability from these people.
Boy, you are so right. There's no question about it. It's just, I'm going to give you a great example. You sound awfully young, so you may not remember this. But in the early 90s, a new category of anti-inflammatory drugs came out. And they were called the COX-2 inhibitor drugs. And the first one that came out was called Vioxx.
Mm-hmm.
And Vioxx was sold like crazy. I mean, the minute it came on the market, they sold literally billions of dollars worth of the product here and overseas. And it didn't take too long before doctors were starting to look at this and say, hey, wait a minute. People are dying on this drug, and they're dying primarily from heart disease. We think that this drug is increasing the rate of heart disease among people that are taking it.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually studies were done that proved that was the case. But the drug companies knew this. They had the research that showed this before the drug ever came on the market. They hid it all. The FDA eventually knew it and never did anything about it until over 150,000 people died worldwide because of side effects, because of cardiac side effects related to this drug.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally pulled it off the market, and it was pulled off everywhere at that particular point.
But how many years was it on the market total? Do you know?
It was on the market about 4 years.
Golly, that's a long time.
Whew. 4 years and millions of people taking the product. I mean, just absolutely unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't care. The drug companies didn't care. They were selling $4.5 billion worth of the product every year. That's a lot of money.
That's huge.
That is funny. And, you know, the sad part about it is they know in every product that comes out, they know exactly how many deaths will occur. It's part of their whole economic structure now, and it becomes nothing but a budget line saying we have to allocate so many hundreds of millions of dollars to settle all the claims for deaths and damage that will come as a result of this drug.
So you're telling me that that's part of their pricing model when they're trying to bring
that's
a new
part of their
prescription.
Pricing model. Yep.
They say we got to set aside 10% of our profit because we're going to kill at least a certain amount of people, and that as long as that certain amount of people falls below our profit margin line, we're going to go ahead and release the drug. Is essentially what you're saying.
Absolutely.
God. Oh, I love
it. Is that unbelievable or what?
Go team.
I know. And this is the same FDA that has criticized the natural products. And, you know, I talk about the number of deaths and people hospitalized. Well, if you compare that to those people that are taking natural health products, forget about the deaths. There aren't any. And forget about the hospitalizations. There are no more than a handful every year.
Right.
If you look at those particular records, they're not even definitely associated with whatever the ingredient is. They're usually only, you know, the type of deal. Somebody gets sick and they go in the hospital and they say, well, I just started taking this new vitamin. Could that be it? Oh, yeah, that's probably it.
Okay.
So these things, when it comes to natural health products, that are almost never proven. I mean, it's just amazing. And yet, we're the industry that gets criticized by the FDA all the time.
Right.
One of the big criticisms of the FDA guess what? There's not enough scientific research on these particular products for us to be sure that they're safe and effective. So you'd think that that would promote a lot more people doing research, right?
You would think, yeah.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, it has. There are now literally tens of thousands of studies being done on natural products all around the world by universities, by medical institutions, by med schools, by hospitals. I mean, you go down the line, and the number of studies that are being done on natural products and natural ingredients is enormous. They are also very expensive stuff. I know, you sound surprised, and I was too.
Well, I'm kind of surprised that it's not just the pharmaceutical. You know, a lot of people just aren't making the connection here that the pharmaceutical companies look to nature to break down, you know, individual components, and then they try and take those individual components and patent them and say that, oh, we're, you know, the miraculous wizards of the world, and we came up with this amazing concoction. But at the same time, they're going to nature to find those things, and that's been going on for thousands of years.
No question about it. You know, every single pharmaceutical company has a huge botanical section that does nothing but just what you said.
Mm-hmm.
They analyze every single plant that they can find. Or any substance, any type of fish, any type of marine substance to find out whether it's effective against diabetes or cancer or infections or this or that. You know, the list kind of goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. But they're tested for all of those things. Yes, you're right. They all come from nature.
It's just crazy to me.
Interesting part of it is that, you know, the pharmaceutical companies have been sitting back watching our industry grow.
Uh-huh.
And before, in the early days, 15, 20 years ago, it was so small that in terms of sales, total sales in the country, that they didn't really bother with it very much. Well, now it's a $35 billion a year industry.
Yeah, now you're competing with their margins.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
They're approaching that on a number of different scales. First of all, what people don't realize, I think, is that they have silently been buying up some of the biggest companies that produce and market natural products. So I guess they kind of figured the old thing, if you can't beat them, join them, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. If you can't beat them, own them.
So they've been doing that. But here's the thing. Let's talk about this proposal, because this benefits the FDA and it benefits the big pharmaceutical companies beyond anything else.
Well, we're going to have to hold it over until after this 3-minute break, Dr. Harris. We are just getting ready to go to commercials, and I do want to talk about this whole, the entire encompassing effect of this new thing from the FDA. So we're just going to go to this quick break, and we'll come back, and then the floor will be yours, sir. This is Dr. Dennis Harris joining us today on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Thank you guys for being here. We got one more segment after this break. Keep it right here, guys.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really?
I gotta try iodine now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow, why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine now. Only at MUSA.org.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Lit 3FM with Nathan Frazier.
Sunday, True Frequency Radio.
Podcast, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We're moving into the final segment of our guest segment today with Dr. Dennis Harris. We're talking about, essentially the evils of the FDA. And I do have to point out for everybody listening out there, just in case you hadn't thought about it before, just bear in mind that every drug that's ever been outlawed by the FDA was first approved by the FDA. Just think about that for just a second. Going back to Dr. Dennis Harris, sir, thank you again for being here today. I want to talk now about this guidance document from the FDA and about all of the various facets of it, because I think that it's a little bit broader than people might anticipate. So will you talk a little bit about that guidance document and all of the ramifications that are included in that, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's really scary, and people don't realize it. If anybody really wants to torture themselves, let me give you a website where you can pull this up, the document itself.
Okie dokie.
It's 27 pages of solid BS. And I mean, if you really love reading insurance policies in detail, you'll love this. But here's how to get it if you want the document. It's tinurl.com/Q9TX3SP. And if you go ahead and put that in, it'll go ahead and pull it up right away for you.
Will you mention that one more time? Will you just say that one more time, Dr. Harris?
Yeah. tinurl.com/Q9TX3ST.
Q9TX3ST. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it'll pull it up. I know it works because I actually did it.
Okay.
I started to read through it and I got it down through about 2 pages and I said, I can't believe people really do this. People really read these things. I'm sure nobody does, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I'm sure you're accurate.
They put these things in, and nobody knows what the hell they really say.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing. Anyway, here is the situation. You know, when you go to do research on a natural ingredient or a natural product, it's really very expensive to do. And studies will cost anywhere from $50,000 to $500,000, depending on what you're doing and the complexity of it and all that type of thing.
Okay.
So, consequently, one of the things you want to be able to do when you finish your study is you want to be able to publish it. I mean, obviously you want people to know what your study turned up, right?
Right. Yeah, you got to earn that grant money somehow, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the way professors get tenure. That's, you know,
yeah.
It's building your bio under and doing it with studies, and that's a big part of it. But the study doesn't count toward your credit if it's not published. And nobody can read it anyway.
Right.
The idea is to get the information out to the public. Well, as I said, there are literally thousands of studies being done all around the world. But now the FDA is saying that if your study is intended to evaluate the dietary supplement's ability to diagnose, cure, mitigate, treat, or prevent the disease, then you're required to submit what is called an IND. This is an investigational new drug application. So they're already saying drug.
Right.
It's a drug. This is the same application that pharmaceutical companies are required to do when they start to do investigation about a real drug.
Oh, okay.
Well, this is not a simple application like you fill in to get your, you know, funding for your house. This thing is about 100 pages long. It requires studies within it to prove that the product that you're trying to test is safe. It requires other studies to prove other things. Just to put this together, do all the requirements, and submit it, costs $2.3 million.
Wow.
Now,
wow.
Supplement companies are small companies. I mean, like our company, we can never afford that. There's no way in the world that we could afford to do that. And that's true with almost all companies across the board. At the very most, they could maybe afford to do it on one particular product, but they couldn't afford to do it on any others. Mm-hmm. Here's the other thing. If you do that, and they accept your IND, your investigational new drug application, and you do the study and publish it, from then on, nobody else can sell that product.
Wow.
So now, for example, we have products for inflammation, for example, that come from 20 different companies or 30 different companies around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But most of those would be eliminated because one company will hold the exclusive rights to, particularly if it's a single ingredient that's included in multiple products.
Right.
Nobody will be able to use that except that one company who has paid that.
Wow. And you have so to, I'd have to assume then that the pharmaceutical companies are going to come in and try and buy out the small supplement companies so that they can. This seems
Absolutely.
To me like a workaround for not being able to patent specific ingredients. Now they can classify them as a drug without having to deal with that patent and still have the ownership, you know, and lack accountability and all the other stuff that they love to have there. I mean, this really seems like a targeted attack from almost like a economic buyout type of position, you know?
Oh, you're 100% right. Boy, you're smart. I like that.
Thanks.
You saw that connection right away, and a lot of people don't know it.
Hmm.
But, you know, the only ones that can really afford to do all these studies on product or on ingredient after ingredient after ingredient is the big pharmaceutical companies.
Wow.
So once they pay the money and they do the study and they publish it, which is standard for them,
right?
They will be in charge of the whole industry. They can control the entire industry and never have to do anything else.
What about, and I'm going to kind of change tack here, but I want to stay on this FDA document, but are there also new regulations kind of coming out of the FDA or the FDA that would target people who might make claims about some sort of supplement?
Oh, yeah.
They raise the
rates?
Well,
they're already doing that.
Right.
I mean, they have just become so, I think you used the word draconian earlier, and that's mm-hmm. really true. They have just become so harsh about dealing with anybody, it's just been absolutely unreal. You know, if we had a lot of people that were adulterating products and bringing out bad stuff that was unsafe, that would be one thing. But that's not going on in the industry now.
Right.
And in fact, you know, almost every manufacturer now and distributor now has to go through a very extensive process called good manufacturing practices. Mm-hmm. And we just had our factory go through that, and it took us 7 months, cost $40,000, and we had a couple of different inspectors that came in and went through everything with a fine-tooth comb.
Right.
But we're being held to almost the same standards as a manufacturer of pharmaceutical products, of real drugs now.
Right.
So when you do that, I mean, there's nothing that's hidden. If you're following their requirements, which we do, anybody can come in at any point and see exactly at any stage of the process what has gone on, exactly how much of which ingredients, the mix of the ingredients, exactly how you handled them, how you tested them, how you went through and inspected them for quality time after time through the process. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not a put it together in your garage type of operation.
No, essentially what you're describing in a manufacturing sense would be similar to getting like an ISO certification, having someone come in and making your organization.
Exactly what it is. Right.
And I've been through that before, so I do, I mean, personally, I totally understand all of the hurdles that would be put up in your way to try and get through some sort of certification process like that. It would be absolutely astronomical.
Yeah, but everybody is now required to do that. You know, a few years ago, that wasn't the case, and there were a lot of people manufacturing in facilities that weren't up to par, or they were doing it in ways that weren't exactly right. Were they dangerous? Probably not, but still, they were things that were slipping through.
Okay.
Now that's not true. I mean, we get inspected all the time. We get inspected by our clients. We get inspected by different groups from the FDA. We get inspected by the NPA, which is the Natural Products Association. So we're constantly under surveillance, and we live with that, and that's just a part of daily life. That's not a problem.
Hmm.
But what it has done is it's really made sure that the products that are coming out now are of the absolute top quality, and they're safe. That doesn't seem to matter to the FDA in this whole thing, regardless of what they've said over and over and over again.
Right. Well, yeah, I think you can take anything they say with a grain of salt these days. It's obviously a money-driven enterprise at this point, you know.
When you talk about claims, I'm going to give you a little example of what the deal is. The group that brought this out into the light, the Alliance for Natural Health, it's been around for a long period of time, and I kind of pulled some stuff up on them, and it's really interesting. Back in 2009, they had filed 3 lawsuits against the FDA, and they were joined in those lawsuits by some dietary supplement formulators, and basically the FDA had refused to allow what are known as qualified health claims. And qualified health claims basically means that you're not going through the same research as you were on a drug, but you are going through reviewed, accepted research on those particular natural products. And the end result of all that research has been overwhelmingly to prove that these did have certain beneficial effects on health. For example, they refused to allow a regimen of qualified health claims on selenium, on vitamin C, on vitamin E, all relating to cancer. And these were things that had been proven in the medical schools. They were studies that had been done by unquestionable sources, you know?
Right.
People that were at the top of the food chain as far as research goes, some others relating to heart disease. You know, just like the thing, you've heard the thing with oats and all that about heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for years they resisted doing any of that, and even though all the research was there, there's no question about it. So, little by little, some of these things are basically coming to light, but my gosh, they cost, I don't know how much those lawsuits had to have cost. They had to have cost at least $500,000 each.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And they filed three lawsuits. Why? Just to be able to get one, you know, one or two of these qualified health claims to be accepted by the FDA so that they could be publishable and used in the marketing. It's amazing.
Well, it is, unless you really understand where their money comes from. I mean, you have to look at the cancer industry is probably the most profitable disease on the planet. And that's why I always walk around. I'll see these billboards that say, you know, we have a cancer treatment center. And I always think, you know, I treat my cat. I give my cat a treat. I don't want to give cancer a treat. I want to cure it. So I want to go to a cancer curing center, not somebody who's just going to continue to. And that's the thing with, I think, with FDA and with all of these type stuff. We could talk about, I'd love to get your impression of vaccinations just in general, given your background. But, you know, I'm of the opinion that if you're a company that has a business model that is based on keeping people unwell, then state mandated vaccines where they're putting in, you know, proprietary chemicals that I cannot know about and they won't tell my doctor about, that seems questionable to me. That seems like that should raise the flag a little bit and say, okay, you guys make all your money when people are sick, and now you're telling me that I have to put this unknown chemical substance into my body because if I don't, I could get sick. Or, you know what I mean? That doesn't seem to be a logical connection. So what are your thoughts on the vaccine thing, just out of curiosity?
I try and have nobody take vaccines that I know.
Right.
Now, I will say that there's an exception to that, and that's probably in terms of the respiratory thing. If you've got somebody with major respiratory disease, then I have no objection to them doing the pneumonia vaccine. But that, and that really is, those are few exceptions.
Right.
Most of the time, I really kind of across the board say, don't take vaccines. You know, the benefits you get from them, or you may get, which are usually much less than they tell you, are not equivalent to the risks.
Right,
there's still a lot of evidence out that vaccines really do some bad things that we haven't been able to totally prove. I mean, there's a lot of connection with mental retardation. There's connection with cerebral palsy. There's connections with many other diseases, including schizophrenia and some of the other mental diseases, you know,
mm-hmm.
and psychiatric diseases. So I'm not real happy about vaccines. I don't take any. I try not to have my kids and grandkids take any. Sometimes they get slipped through because of the requirements of the schools, you know.
Right.
We're getting all kinds of heat on that.
Yeah.
Schools won't, well, out here anyway, at least in Phoenix, Arizona, you can't get your kid into school without a vaccination certificate.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy
to me. And the only way around it is homeschooling. Well, you can't homeschool every kid.
No, not if you're expected to work two full-time jobs trying to pay all your mortgage and stuff. There's no way.
Thank
you don't
you
have time.
Much.
You don't have time for that, you know. And that's part of the plan. I think that was part of the agenda from the get-go. You know, it's part of this whole, we're getting into bigger topics now, but obviously the division of the family unit was part of, you know, this entire breakdown of America as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, a couple of other incidents. You know, let me get back to this guidance thing for a minute because I know our time's winding down. But here's what's happened just by them publishing that, their proposed guidance. Research on supplements has really kind of slowed down and come to almost an end in this country because they're assuming that this particular guidance will eventually become a rule.
Okay.
In which case, it'll be law.
How does that, I'm sorry to interrupt, how does that happen? Do they vote on it? Does the FDA get together with a committee and make it happen? Or how does that actually happen?
There is a certain committee, and it's called the Administrative Committee or something like that for rulemaking.
Bunch of ex-pharmaceutical CEOs, I'm sure, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's for all kinds of rules from all kinds of different parts. Not limited to the FDA.
Okay.
But supposedly, in order for anything to become a rule in any of those departments, they have to take it through that committee. Well, they've never even bothered to do that in this particular case. They just published it, and they're treating it like it's already the law. And it scared enough people that because if you do end up doing the research and publishing it, the person doing it, and you haven't filed an IND, the person doing the study or the institution can also be fined anywhere up to the cost of the IND, which is $2.3 million.
Wow. Is there like a window? I mean, they give you an hour or something to submit your IND? Or...
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know. But think about that if you're the one, you know, wanting to do some research on it. I mean, that would that make you say, let's go?
Well, you wouldn't want to be the company doing the research, especially if somebody else was responsible for filing the IND, because they're two separate costs. You know, they could maybe afford to do the research, but then right. It comes down to filing and they say, oh, we don't want to do it. And all of a sudden your name is on the research and you're sitting here like a duck above water. Like,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely. But not only that, but if the paper does get published on a nutrient that you didn't file an IND, it also means that the FDA can ban that nutrient in question, the nutrient in question to be purchased in supplement form. So they can, and that would apply not just to that ingredient, but to anything that contains that ingredient.
Wow.
You know,
They could not accept your IND then too, and then they could just own it as soon as your research was done. They wouldn't even have to accept it.
You know, not only does it cost $2.3 million to prepare the IND and file it,
right.
But you're right; they could send it back, and the process itself is about a 3-year process.
Are you kidding?
It's not something that you can file in a month.
Okay.
So you got to get somebody who's willing to do a study. And pay for the expense of the study, and then you've got to do all this, and it takes you 3 years to do it.
All the while they're potentially liable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. The Administrative Procedures Act is the committee that this has to go through.
Okay.
But they haven't done it.
Hmm.
But the problem is that research in this country is being shut down on natural products. Now, research is still going on in Europe and other countries because they don't have this kind of an inhibition. But I don't know what that's really going to mean when those studies start being published and available here in this country.
What does it mean for products that are already on the market right now, supplements and, you know, things like that? Is this whole process going to yank everything off the market so they're going to have to go through individually all the products that are already available?
Well, take a look at any natural products you have. If you look at the label, you're going to see that there's a whole variety of different ingredients in most of those. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not just single ingredient products for the most part, unless you're buying a single vitamin or single mineral or something like that. Most of those are combined in various ways in a formula that is designed to do the job. Well, a product containing, ginkgo biloba may have been on the market and it might contain that, you know, that's a common inclusion in formulas that are on the market to help you think more clearly or
right.
Remember better or things like that, right?
Yeah.
So what happens if somebody pays, if a pharmaceutical company, for example, pays the fee, prepares the IND, and does research on ginkgo and publishes that study, they then own that. And that applies not only to just that ingredient, but any product that contains that ingredient anywhere.
Wow.
So can all of those be yanked back and canceled and say everybody else can be sued if you're going to go ahead and use this, or we'll report you to the FDA and the FDA will take action and pull that off the shelves? You bet.
Wow. It's like a supplemental Armageddon that we're about ready to see.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I'll give you a good example. I mean, there's a pharmaceutical company that already owns the rights to, one of the forms of vitamin B6 and another one, pyridoxamine.
Wow.
They've already got the rights to that, and they've already had people start pulling anything else that contains it off the market. And another pharmaceutical company is trying to do the same thing with another form of vitamin B6 called pyridoxal phosphate. So So once they own that, these are things you take every day.
Uh-huh.
They're in every multiple vitamin.
Yeah, exactly.
They can pull all of those off shelf, so you can only take mine.
Wow. Wow, this is crazy, Dr. Harris. I mean, seriously, that is an absolute...
I gotta tell you, people have no idea how extensive this is and how it really is going to penetrate every level they have. 54% of all of the treatments that are done in this country are done with natural products. 54%. I mean, yes, I can. If you own the drug company, I can certainly understand why you want to do that. But this is insane.
It really is. So, what is your recommendation? We've only got a couple of minutes yet left. So, I mean,
you've got to go ahead. You've got to go ahead and write to the FDA. If you just pull it up through Google, contact information for FDA.
Okay.
You'll be able to go ahead and write to them. Write to your congressman. Write to your senators. It's the only way that we have to put pressure on these people. And they do listen to that part.
Right.
Because their funding overall comes from Congress.
Should we be stocking up on stuff, too, just in case?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
I would do that.
I would do that.
I always buy ahead. We always buy ahead.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense to me. I'm just wondering if there's any really things that are going to be targeted. You know, what's on top of their list?
I don't know. I really don't know what their thinking is on it. They'll target the ones that are the most available
mm-hmm.
so that they can get that, so that they can start controlling it.
Well, I would look at what's the most profitable right now in that margin, you know, or in that market of supplements.
Vitamins are.
Yeah.
Vitamins
so obviously it's
the number one. Vitamins are the number one category that are sold. In this country.
Dr. Harris, we're just about out of time. Where can people learn more about you? Do you have a website, or is there some place where people can learn more about you on the internet?
I do have a website. It is, pardon me, drharrisoriginal.com. drharrisoriginal.com.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah, so you can go ahead and get on there and learn a little bit more about me.
Well, fantastic. I cannot tell you again how appreciative we are for you to join us today. I think that this is an issue that people just, you know, we're being surrounded all the time by these agencies that are trying to encroach upon our ability to be self-sufficient and healthy. And, you know, until you can isolate the threats, it's difficult to mount an opposition to them. So I'm really, really thankful.
No question.
For you coming onto the show today, so I really do appreciate
it. Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for having me, and boy, I hope people really do act on this because it is so critical, folks.
I totally agree. I think getting on the horn to the FDA, letting them know that you're aware of what it is that they're trying to do, also writing the senators, your state local representatives as well, but at the same time, be prepared that that effort might not work, and you might, you know, right now, get all the stuff that you think could be yanked off the market soon. We might be a matter of weeks away from not being able to get real simple vitamins and stuff, which people have been predicting for a long time, and it could be a very scary world ahead. So definitely good information here, guys. Thank you for all of you who tuned in today to hear Dr. Harris. I hope that you guys gained something from that. Tomorrow's show, Chris Kitsey will be on. We'll be talking about seen and unseen.is and about the battle against encryption that we're going to see as a result of this Charlie Hebdo attack in Paris there. So do stay tuned for that. Also, please support Truth Frequency Radio. These guys do such a great job. Support the other hosts. We will see you again tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.